We're now going to have an industry response to be followed by a consumer response to John's paper. So I'd like to ask Rob Whelan to give the industry response. Rob's the CEO of the Insurance Council of Australia.
Well, good morning, everybody, and thanks to the Institute for the opportunity to address you this morning. I'd like to start by commending the review panel on a very well-written and thoughtful issues paper. I think we have much common ground in that industry view versus the issues highlighted in the paper. Perhaps where we do differ is more in terms of emphasis and future direction going forward in some areas. What I'd like to cover with you today is just an industry perspective on the issues papers, and I'd like to try and constrain my remarks to three key areas. Flood as a problem, what is the true nature of that problem? And I think there's been some discussion this morning about how we go about defining this as an issue. It is how you define a problem that actually helps you understand how you move forward to a solution, and I think it's fundamental that we start there. I'd also like to profile just how the industry has been responding over the last 4 to 5 years and what progress has actually been made in this area in trying to resolve this problem, and it is a vexed and complex problem. And then potentially a way forward that the industry sees as perhaps the best way of moving to eradicate the problem rather than just band-aiding it. So to the problem. This issue of flood is a persistent risk to approximately 7% of residential properties in Australia. The problem is big, it's growing, and it's expensive, something in the order of $400 to $450 million per year in damage is caused by riverine flood. And it's quite clear that the same areas tend to flood on a regular basis. It is, in very many respects, a very restricted geography that is affected by this event. And to many, in many respects, poor planning and land use is at the fundamental heart of why these properties continue to be affected by flood. And the increasing number of properties in these areas simply perpetuates and exacerbates the problem. So it is not necessarily a universal problem. It is restricted to specific geography, to specific areas that tend to be constantly flooded on a regular basis. If you look at what we would see as the key drivers of the flood risk, the land use problem is fundamental. Going forward, councils and state governments need to really look at the issues around where they choose to have development and the types of development that go forward. We don't want to, out of this whole process, get to a situation where we continue to add to the stock of at-risk properties. Similarly, inadequate flood mapping and data contributes to the lack of awareness amongst these people who live in these areas as to the risk that they're facing. And that goes to governments as well. I'm not convinced that actually governments are fully aware of the risks that their assets are. We just need to look at Queensland and the infrastructure costs that have been caused by the floods. So fundamental to this is being able to resolve the issue of available data that is comprehensive and up-to-date. I think we almost have a cottage industry approach to being able to provide data on this fundamental issue in Australia, which is simply not good enough. And then to the issue of mitigation. This is a key driver of the problem because properties that are at risk need to be mitigated. We need to reduce the risk to these at-risk properties going forward and, as I said before, not add to the problem by perpetuating poor planning decisions. And then we get to insurance, which is at the end of the risk management chain, essentially. We're there to pick up the pieces. You have to ask the question, are those pieces in, should those pieces have been there in the first place? The availability of flood insurance in the marketplace for those at extreme risk is a problem, and it is recognised in the issues paper, and the industry recognises that as well and acknowledges it. We need to do something to help those individuals who are currently at the extreme risk end of that profile. It is a very complex problem, and what I am concerned about, I guess, in reading through the issues paper is that there tends to be, and it is part of the terms of reference, I guess, but there is a singular focus on insurance as being the solution to the problem in many respects. Not exclusively, but in many respects. And it does tend to disregard the fact that insurance is at the end of the risk management exercise. We need to understand that there are many factors going forward before insurance is dealt with that actually contribute to the problem. Those communities that continuously get flooded tend to understand that they need to do something about it. And we've seen some mitigation works in certain areas that have shown that communities can be protected if they're aware of their flood risk. A one-dimensional response to this whole complex problem will not actually get rid of the problem over time. The challenge for the, I guess, the review panel, but us generally, is to reduce the ongoing risk of flood in those communities where we see that there is a risk, and to reduce that to zero as much as we possibly can. By reducing risk as well, we also reduce the cost of insurance going forward. To us, the real problem, the real challenge, is to move from that high-risk profile that John showed in his presentation, which is in the issues paper, to one where we've eradicated that high end of the extreme risk profile. That, to me, is the real challenge that we need to deal with. Otherwise, I think we'll all be here again in 10 years' time when the next event happens and we still haven't resolved the fact that there are those communities that still are at risk. Now I want to turn to what the industry has been doing. The industry recognised at least 5 years ago, if not well before that, but certainly took on as a specific project to attempt to find ways in which to provide adequate insurance into the marketplace for riverine flood. And we would argue that there's been significant progress in this area and that there is no essential market failure. I guess the impetus for government intervention in any market is where there is a clear market failure. And you can point to the terrorism pool, where terrorism insurance was withdrawn from the market and a pool was created to fill that void. There is no such market failure, we would contend, in the insurance for riverine flood. There has been expanding cover over time by the insurance industry, and we've also acknowledged that we need to do more in terms of consumer information and education. So hence the common definition of flood is acceptable to the industry and much progress has been made on that, and we expect decisions around that very shortly. Similarly, the key fact statement, which will profile to consumers exactly what they are covered for and what is excluded from their policies. And we also believe there's a big role for point of sale advice, either on the internet or by the telephone, where we can point to consumers as to what their likely risk profiles might be in their particular residences and allow them to make choices as to the appropriate cover that they need. And also fundamentally is the need for information, the database. And the insurance industry took on itself to provide a national information database on flood maps. And it did that on its own volition. It funded it, and it went round to each of the councils around Australia and attempted to get the information necessary to build a comprehensive database on flood maps. That prompted insurers to come into the marketplace having got the information that they needed to underwrite the risk. So if you look at the availability of flood cover, which is a fundamental point in John's paper, in 2006 there was about 3% of all household policies actually offered some form of riverine or inland flood cover. By 2011, that's grown to over half, that's 54% of policies. And I confidently predict that probably by the end of 2012 and the beginning of 2013, about 84-85% of policies in the marketplace will offer cover for riverine flood. So that's 8 out of 10, potentially, in the very near future, will offer riverine flood. So cover is available and will increasingly be available going forward. Similarly, the level of information in the market is growing rapidly. The National Information Flood Information Database has grown to a point where now 80% of flood catchment areas have now been mapped. Regrettably, the area that's still outstanding is that red circle, Queensland. Only about 17% of the catchment areas in Queensland actually have been mapped, and that's due to the reluctance of local councils in parts of Queensland to provide that information to the information database. Numbers of reasons there, I won't postulate what they are, some commercial, some other, but it is the one that is the recalcitrant. And, of course, that's where large numbers of the risks actually reside. But in terms of going forward, we believe by 2012, some 90% of catchment areas will be mapped into this database. Again, giving insurers the information that they need to provide adequate risk cover in these areas. So if we look at how the industry has actually performed, if we look at the claims profile, so of all residential building policies sold nationally, about 54% have flood cover. If you look at how the level of denials or acceptances profiled against the different parts of Queensland and Victoria over the most recent flood events, in the Brisbane local government area, something in the order of 85% of claims were accepted and 15% were denied. In the rural areas of Queensland, that profile was increased to 92% were accepted. And if you look at regional Victoria, even higher again, about 93% accepted. Now, that would tend to suggest prima facie evidence that where you are aware of your flood risk, in that you've flooded on more frequent occasions, you're more likely to seek out the appropriate cover and therefore have the right insurance policy. I would postulate that quite a proportion of that 15% denials, which were largely due to not having the right policy cover, actually weren't aware that they were at risk in those areas of Brisbane and Ipswich. Now, if you have an informed consumer, then the chances are they will act rationally and take out the appropriate insurance. So now to a way forward. We don't subscribe to mandatory cover as necessarily the panacea to this very complex problem. And it does tend to suggest that this will drive up costs both to the industry and to whoever needs to fundamentally subsidise the at-risk properties in the extreme end of the scale. One of the reasons why we don't necessarily see mandatory cover as the way forward, either with opt-out or just straight mandatory cover, is it doesn't deal, from our point of view, with the real problem. The vast majority of Australian consumers and residences are not at risk from riverine flood. Some 97%, or no, it's 95% or so, are not at risk at all. It gives no incentive into the marketplace to mitigate the existing risk levels. And it also gives no incentive to stop the growth of at-risk properties, as I've mentioned before. Why would we continue to exacerbate the problem by continuing to build and develop in those areas most at risk? And it also has the potential of increasing costs to all. Someone has to pay. The expense of a cover for extreme risks needs some kind of subsidy from taxpayers. Any additional cost just simply adds to the burden of the cost of living. It's simply just another tax. And I think our research shows that the general population has a very low appetite to subsidise those at risk when they are not at risk. I think we worked out in our research something like $4 a month, less than $50 a year, was the tolerance level. And it also, in instituting mandatory cover where all insurers who underwrite household and contents insurance must include riverine flood cover, would tend to change the competitive landscape. And this could lead to the level of competition in household insurance actually declining, as certain insurers, because of either the lack of availability of reinsurance cover or their inability to secure appropriate capital to underwrite that risk, withdraw from the market. And that, as a consequence, could also lead to those who are left in the market having an increased risk of anti-selection, which may also not be palatable to them. So once you intervene in marketplaces, you do change marketplaces and reactions occur Now, I'm not saying these are definites, but they are certainly possibilities. From our perspective, we see the way forward not as the status quo as it's been profiled in the issues paper, which tends to suggest a rather static environment. We would rather say this is actually a dynamic market-based solution. The government's very keen to profile the carbon tax and the ETS as a way of actually solving the world's problems regarding climate change with a market-based solution. Well, we believe a market-based solution can also solve the issues predominantly of flood. The component parts of that market-based solution are better flood maps and data, increased disclosure of risk awareness, and also the availability of cover, so we have informed consumers who make rational choices, targeted mitigation and land use planning so we don't exacerbate and perpetuate the problem. This leads to overall lower risk levels and increases the number of insurers coming into the marketplace, driving up competition, lowering risk levels, and therefore lowering the premiums in the marketplace, increasing the overall level of affordable flood cover as a consequence. This, in fact, is actually happening now. It does leave us with this one big problem, however, and that's acknowledged in the issues paper, and we acknowledge it also, that there is the unaffordability question. There will be always a residual of properties that are uninsurable at affordable prices because they are in extreme risk areas. They are a minority, but it's still a relatively large number of residences. We don't believe a government pool is necessary to put a large amount of money growing year after year after year just waiting for the next disaster to occur, but perhaps the government should consider a targeted direct rebate scheme of some form or premium subsidy to assist those at the high end of the extreme risk level. The scheme, however, should be contingent upon appropriate risk management actions being undertaken to reduce the number of properties at risk and to ensure that those who are eligible for rebates are actually taking some action to reduce their risk. Now, it's important to think, where's the money come from? Well, in fact, the state governments already collect nationally from insurance policyholders some $4.6 billion every year in state taxes, predominantly stamp duties and fire services levies. So the money pool is actually already there. It's just how you allocate it. Key factors for success we see going forward. Clearly, flood data is essential, and creating the awareness that increases both the consumer's knowledge but also encourages increased market participation. Mitigation is there, needs to be there to deal with the legacy issues. We can't, as some commentators said, pick up Brisbane and move it to a safer place. No, you can't. Of course you can't. But you can institute adequate mitigation measures. One very cheap one might be actually rewriting the manual on how to manage the Wivenhoe Dam. And mitigation actually has very strong return on investment. If you look at some of the examples, even in the issues paper, I think the Lismore one, which had a levee which was built around Lismore at the cost of something like $19 million. The year after it was completed, there was a 1 in 10-year flood occurred there, saved that community $15 million on that one occasion. If you looked at that over the life of the levee, that's an enormous return on investment. And I would suggest governments would be well advised to look at that type of investment. And then targeted subsidies to reduce the risk management and protect those who are most vulnerable. And we accept that that is indeed necessary as well. So to summarise, flood is a persistent, expensive and complex problem that needs to be resolved through a partnership of a number of stakeholders, not just the insurance industry. Insurance is only a part of the solution and it is at the end of the risk chain. Any additional costs imposed on insurance will simply add to the burden of the cost of living, and that's something we all want to avoid. The real challenge from our point of view is to minimise the risk. Mitigation is a good way of doing it. It can create more affordable insurance in the marketplace and reduce the community's exposure to risk. Subsidising current risk without mitigation means the problem will never really be addressed, and we'll be back here talking about it again in a few years' time. We do believe that a market-based dynamic solution is available, is effective, and will deliver the required outcomes without the unintended consequences of government intervention. Thank you for your attention.